And it comes down to the biggest issue, and I'm sure you guys are very aware, this is the reps. And we have to be really smart with our plan and how we practice. And because it's not just one guy, it's two guys, and there's Mark and there's Connor. So we need to make sure that we're getting everyone ready to play. And that's flexible, because it does, as we go, as we assess where Mike's at, then we'll assess where Mark is, and then Connor and Mitch as well. So it's, we have to be flexible with it as well, and see how everyone's picking up everything, because there's three new faces and only one guy that's was in the room last year. And Connor did play well in that Kansas City game and sparked us a little bit, but he's the only guy with any experience in the system.
Cheers, Bears fans! This is Bears Bar Room Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and that was offensive coordinator Dow Loggins referencing one of the topics I'd like to address on this show, reps. How are the Bears going to divide reps among four quarterbacks, including their number one draft pick, Mitch Trubisky, and the number one quarterback on their depth chart, Mike Glennon? It's a sticky situation, especially when you consider that the only quarterback with familiarity of the playbook is Connor Shaw, who is currently fourth on the depth chart. All of these guys need some education. I don't care what Pink Floyd says. We've got plenty of topics to talk about, and frankly, many of them are from you, our listeners. 30 minutes before we taped, I asked you for some questions, and you sent in some really good ones, and we will definitely tackle those. So with me to talk about reps and answer your questions and any other topic that pops up are Bears Barroom Analyst Shane the Mailman Marsaw, plus the Skywalker of the Yoda, Luke Skywalker Tandem over at Bears Hour Live, Lauren Cox. Philotoshin and Jose Cotto are unable to join us tonight. Shane, are you as concerned about quarterback reps during camp and preseason games as I am? And don't you think we are putting winning on the back burner if we give the rookie as many reps as our number one quarterback?
My biggest fear is I look at our number two quarterback in Mark Sanchez, and I don't think that there's any reason whatsoever for him to get any reps at all. It's obviously, to me, it's all about Mike Glennon and Mitch or Mitchell, whatever. Have we decided what we're going with here at Bears Barroom? Are we doing Mitch or Mitchell?
We can go however you like.
I'm gonna say Mitch, but yeah, to me it's all about Glennon. I mean, this is a little bit of a poker game, you know, at the end of the day, guys, with Mike Glennon. Ryan Pace is trying to catch some lightning in a bottle to have him show some semblance of being a viable starting NFL quarterback, where he can, you know, use him as a trade chip in the offseason, because we all know what our future holds, and that's in one Mitch Trubisky. But I mean, it is a fascinating topic, and I'm sure you guys will have some different ways to look at it that I'm excited to hear about. But it is going to be interesting to see how it unfolds, because we have a complete unknown at every level of the depth chart, and our future quarterback only has 13 collegiate starts, so there's even more of an unknown there. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this all unfolds this summer.
Yeah, let me ask Lauren that same question. And also, Lauren, if you can kind of segue a little bit into your evaluation, because I know you've done a lot of tape work over at Bears Hour Live regarding Mike Glennon. And what did you and Phil kind of, where did you guys kind of end up on regarding his abilities to be the number one quarterback? But first, give me your opinion about reps and what you think the Bears are going to do and what are the big challenges here.
Yeah, I'm going to start with the Luke Skywalker Yoda reference you made there for Bears Hour Live. That was brand new for me, threw me back a little bit here, but I'll take it. I think Luke Skywalker ends up pretty much being the big hero that everyone loves, and Yoda's just kind of like the little guy in the corner. So, you know, send a message to Phil early to let him know where the power dynamic here lies.
He does lose one of his jerk off hands, though. That's
you know, that's true. Yes, keep that girlfriend.
Anyway, these quarterback reps, this is tough for me, because I feel like this isn't a team that necessarily has a lot to play for, at least right now in 2017. I mean, it's not like, I mean, you know, we talked about the injuries last year hurting the roster a little bit, but I don't know if we really felt after a couple weeks that even if this team had been healthy last year, that they would have been a playoff team or at least in the battle for a divisional, you know, any kind of wild card spot, because there's just a lot of issues still as far as all these pieces coming together. And maybe they'll take some steps forward, but it would take, I think, looking at this roster, it would take a lot of guys coming together and probably exceeding expectations in order to make this team playoff worthy and have something to play for in 2017. I mean, it's not out of the question, but I think it's a bit optimistic to think that, you know, with what they've lost and what they've gained across the board, that they're ready to take that 3-13 team into a 10-6, maybe 11-5 team to get into the playoffs. So from that standpoint, I part of me feels like, yeah, just, you know, give Trubisky as many reps as you can, because you're not really counting on 2017. But at the same time, you never know, you know, if a guy like Glennon shows out and maybe is a 3,500, 4,000-yard receiver this year and puts a bunch of touchdowns and sort of lives up to that hype, then maybe you start to have a chance here and, you know, your defense starts to come together. Guys like Lamar Houston and Pernell McPhee and Leonard Floyd get healthy and stay healthy and continue to play well. These new pieces in your secondary, you know, maybe Kyle Fuller comes back and picks up where he left off. I think we're going to talk about him more later. Maybe Prince Amukamara finds a resurgence and, you know, you start to get all these pieces that come together and you're in a playoff push. But there's a lot of ifs there and a lot of moving parts, and it's pretty rare that all of those things happen at the same time. We're going to get some of those things. You know, we're going to get, you know, at least a couple of these positions really step up and play above their expectations. But it feels like somewhere along the roster, there's going to be some letdown and some players that maybe we had higher expectations for that won't be quite as good as we think. And then you're back in this 5-6-7 win season. And then at that point, is it worth having put all this preparation into Mike Glennon just to win 6 or 7 games? Or are you better off getting Mitch Trubisky ready for 2018, when maybe you can actually start to make some moves on this team when you really got a lot of your foundational pieces in place on both sides of the ball? Whereas right now, you know, you see a guy like Amukamara, a guy like Demps, guys like Mitch Unrein that are sort of just these fill-in pieces right now. And same with the wide receiver position, where you're still looking at getting a full foundation in for this roster. And so I find myself wanting to just give Trubisky the reps necessary to put his development first and foremost. But at that point, then why is John Fox even your head coach? I mean, it seems like this team is prepared as though they want to try and win in 2017. So I think you're going to see Glennon get the majority of the reps, and Trubisky does, you know, side stuff with the coaches and get some reps with the second team and maybe a little bit with the first team. But I think we're going to see a lot of Mike Glennon focus for at least a while here.
You know, this is actually a good time to weave in a question from one of our followers on Twitter. This is Nate Myers, who submitted two or three really good questions here. He asks, if Glennon has a really good 2017, do you see him as a way to get back our third rounder back next year or even more via a trade? Let me ask Shane that question.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's kind of all part of Pace's big, you know, poker play here. Like I said earlier, he's trying to catch lightning in a bottle, and everybody knows that this is a quarterback starved league. I mean, when you see a team like Minnesota giving up, you know, a future first rounder plus for a guy like Sam Bradford, that tells you all you need to know. And Mike Glennon is still 27 years old. And if he goes out, like Nate was saying, and you know, has a really good 2017, that's nothing but positive for Ryan Pace heading into the off season. I would say just getting back a third rounder for a, you know, 27, 28 year old quarterback coming off a really good season that's under team control for 2 more years, you know, with a very nice contract, and he'd only have what, $2.5 million left that's guaranteed on the deal after this season. I think a third rounder would kind of be low compensation at that point. You know, you could say maybe a third rounder that can improve to a 2 or maybe a 2 and a 4. But I think this is all part of the big poker game moving forward. And that's why I think Lauren is right, where we're going to see a lot of Mike Glennon early. But when, you know, he does come out of the games, I don't want to see, you know, in the preseason, I don't want to see Mark Sanchez going in there and eating up valuable reps that your future franchise quarterback Mitch Trubisky could be getting, because I don't think that really benefits anybody. Mark Sanchez is a veteran quarterback that's bounced around the league quite a bit and has been in a lot of different offenses, so he's got more than enough reps, and I think they're too valuable to be given to a guy like him that's under a one-year deal when you can be giving them to a guy like Trubisky. But I do totally agree with what Lauren said. It's going to be Mike Glennon early and often, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I'd like to see a scenario where in that first preseason game, it's Glennon in the first half and Trubisky in the second half, and then in that second preseason game, maybe it's Glennon for a quarter and Trubisky for three quarters, and then in that third preseason game, Glennon goes most of the game, and then in that fourth preseason game, Trubisky gets the start, and that might be the last time we see him all season long if for some reason this team surprises us all and is in playoff contention, which is unlikely given, you know, that first half of the schedule is pretty damn tough. But you never know. Maybe they have built to win. Or one of the things that I, you know, and this is again based on a very observant comment by Lauren two or three shows ago, where he started the show saying that the free agency was for John Fox and the draft was for Ryan Pace in the future. Well, you know, it's almost like Ryan Pace has told John Fox, yeah, I got you all these great players, and you're really set up for next year, man. You should be able to make a run at the playoffs. And then as soon as John leaves the room, Ryan Pace is like, stupid fucking idiot.
Yeah, we're going to double your win total.
But so how do you feel about that, Lauren, about, you know, the possible trade value of a guy like Mike Glennon after the 2017 season? You think that teams will be hunting for him like Shane kind of prognosticates?
I think we're gonna see Glennon play as many games as it's valuable for his trade value. So I think if Mike Glennon plays all 16 games, that means he's playing at a very, well, at least a high enough level that they don't feel the need to just play Trubisky anyway, and maybe the team is winning a decent number of games, and then I think you could see his value go pretty high. I think quarterbacks especially tend to get a little bit inflated, especially if they're starting to show a lot on the field. And I know at this point, even if Glennon plays well, he'll still be sort of a one-year wonder, although he's kind of already sort of a one-year wonder from Tampa Bay, but that still wasn't really seen as enough proof that he's ready to play, which I agree that it wasn't, but I wonder how well another year in Chicago will be seen as proof, or if there's going to be legitimate concern about him. Well, he did it one year in Chicago. Is he going to be able to do it elsewhere? But I mean, I was looking back at other quarterback trades, and obviously the first one that comes to mind is Sam Bradford for a first-round pick. I wouldn't be unreasonable for Schaub to, or for Mike Glennon to be able to perform at least to some of the standard that a guy like Sam Bradford has in the past. Maybe Bradford's been a bit more consistent, and you know, we might not be able to get, what was it, like 72% completion from Sam Bradford this year. You know, can't expect that from Glennon, but if he could put up, you know, 35, 36, 3,700 yards this year and maybe 15, 20 touchdowns to maybe 10 interceptions, that's borderline Sam Bradford territory. He got traded for a first-round pick. I also look back, I Freudian slipped it just a minute ago, Matt Schaub, when he was traded from the Atlanta Falcons to the Houston Texans, he was traded for 2 second-round picks and a first-round pick swap, which was only end up being 2 slots, I think, in the draft. But still, I think a third-round pick seems low for Glennon if he's playing well. If he's not exactly lighting it up, if he's putting up sort of the Matt Barkley, Brian Hoyer performances, I don't think teams are going to necessarily trade for him as though he's going to be their starter. I think he becomes a high-end backup at that point, and that's when you start to get to that, you know, day three type of picks there. But I think Shane started to hit at it there, that I think when regardless of what happens with Glennon, you're going to see it be a conditional draft pick where they trade a third round pick, say, and then if he's their starter week one, it becomes a second round pick, and if he gets the team to the playoffs, it becomes a first round pick or something like that, where there's different thresholds that he has to make on his new team in order for the Bears compensation to continue to go up. And then it'll sort of be, I mean, that's sort of the safety net for that team trading him, and it'll be that proof of, okay, were you a one-year wonder in Chicago, or were you just in the right situation there, and maybe his new team isn't going to be able to facilitate his success the way the Bears may have been able to this year. But we're getting pretty future hypothetical here, so I don't want to get too far there, but it's I think you can legitimately get some real compensation for him that can help build this team in the future.
You know, frankly, I have high hopes for Glennon this season. When I saw him play in his rookie season, I was really impressed with what he did, having to come off the bench, I think in the second or third game of the season, early in the season, I think it was when Josh McCown got hurt. And for a guy who didn't have an offensive line, who didn't have a lot of weapons to deal with, didn't have a run game because I think their running back was hurt, you know, he performed admirably for a rookie quarterback. And, you know, he didn't lose that job. It was just simply the Bucs had access to the number one draft pick, and you're not going to bypass a Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, the top two picks in that draft. So I think he can come in here, and like Lauren says, he can definitely perform at that Brian Hoyer, Matt Barkley level where he can pile up a lot of yards. The thing is can he be a difference maker and create more scoring chances for the Bears? You know, one of the interesting graphics that I saw on Twitter this week was from one of the organizations that Lauren works for, Pro Football Focus, and they had Matt Barkley as the second ranked quarterback in terms of drops by wide receivers. Well, imagine if those drops were cut in half or were cut to nearly zero. Barkley would have had a much better go and might still be on this roster competing for a job this season. Not saying that he would be competing for the number one job, but there is something about Dowell Loggins' offense that does make it quarterback friendly, at least in terms of moving the ball and piling up yards. And so, given what I've seen of Glennon in the past and what I've seen of Loggins' offense, particularly with the lack of weapons that Loggins had for his offense through most of the season, I think there's a mighty good chance that Glennon could perform at a high level. And as Shane says, the return on investment could be a couple of third round picks, maybe a couple of second round picks, or something, you know, that would be really beneficial. Any other thoughts on that topic, guys?
You know, Lauren brought up the Matt Schaub thing. I think a couple other guys, I mean, one is taking you back a little ways, and they're both former Philadelphia Eagles quarterbacks, is A.J. Feely. You know, he's a guy that kind of stepped in and didn't have really much of a track record, but he showed some signs of being a viable quarterback. I guess it's kind of better when you're dealing with Dave Wannstedt was the coach down in Miami at the time and gave up a second rounder for A.J. Feely, but then Andy Reid turned around and drafted Kevin Cobb when they had Donovan McNabb, and then they signed Michael Vick, and you saw him show a few little signs, and they ended up trading him to Arizona for a second rounder and the cornerback that's I'm forgetting his name now, but he plays for the Giants now. So
Dominic Rogers Cromartie.
Yes, yep, yeah. For him. And so there is, you know, kind of a blueprint out there for these young, you know, veteran quarterbacks with upside in terms of what you're going to be getting back with compensation. So I think, you know, I think this is all part of it. The pace kind of, you know, when he gave up that future three to sweeten the pot a little bit. And I think that's all part of it. You know, he thinks that he can get back because it's pretty obvious that he has a lot of faith in Mike Glennon because they, you know, supposedly scouted him very, very hard when he was in New Orleans when they were looking at him too. So I think it's pretty safe to say he does have some semblance of confidence in the guy moving forward. So it's going to be real interesting to see how this unfolds. Cause one thing that Coach Fox did say was he wants guys to undersell and overperform. And to me, that's like a t-shirt that Mike Glennon could wear. Cause really, I think it fits him perfectly.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Shane, I was distracted a little bit. Did you mention also the Packers? Because they had that formula for a number of years under general manager Ron Wolf. So they had Brunell, Matt Hasselbeck, and Aaron Brooks, who ended up in New Orleans. And I think they got really useful resources that helped them win a Super Bowl with developing those quarterbacks for other people to trade with.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I mean, you know, Pace was eviscerated for, you know, he didn't give up draft compensation for Mike Glennon. He gave up cap space. So, like, you know, we've said, he's just trying to catch lightning in a bottle, and that's the same type of deal. You know, he's spending this ample amount of cap space that he had, just taking a shot on Mike Glennon, and it may come back in terms of draft pick compensation in 2018 just by spending some cap space in 2017. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, at this point, Mike Glennon's kind of the forgotten man. You know, here we're a few weeks removed from the draft, and everything is all Mitch Trubisky all the time. So hopefully when he gets up on the podium on Tuesday, and I know that was one of the questions that one of the people asked us for tonight, what we want to hear from him at the Tuesday presser. But, you know, I want to hear Mike get up there and talk with some confidence, and I want to hear him say that he's, you know, willing to work with Mitch, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there.
Yeah, well, that was one of those questions that we got via Twitter. Raphael Tucker asked, what do you guys each want to hear from Mike Glennon at Tuesday's presser? Lauren, what do you want to hear from Glennon?
Yeah, I think Shane hit it on the head. It's about being confident and really being unnerved by any of the Trubisky move. I mean, obviously, he's going to have to address some difficult questions about how he feels about that, whatever, and I think he's going to kind of, I mean, he'll be honest, but he's not going to probably be 100% honest. I mean, he's going to say, you know, maybe it did. It's a little bit disappointing. You know, I think we're going to hear similar to what we heard Jay Cutler say when he was asked, you know, how would you feel if the Bears drafted a quarterback? He's like, well, I understand wanting to do what's in the best interest of the team, but I also feel like we could use that draft pick on someone to help us now rather than help us in the future and help me win games now. And I think we're going to hear Mike Glennon say similar things. I think he's going to sort of put a smile on and say he'll be happy to help Trubisky, but he's going to be focused on, you know, his own development and winning Chicago Bears football games, because I'm named the starter and he's going to act like it and prepare like it. And, you know, the day Trubisky takes over, great. He's going to do everything in his power to make sure that that's a long way from now, and just kind of treat it as though he is the starting quarterback and Trubisky is a backup, and keep working until that changes.
I personally hope that he comes out there and he just sounds like a guy who is confident and in command. And, you know, if he goes out there and says, you know, Trubisky's going to be carrying the clipboard for this season, that's for sure, because I'm not giving up this job. I've invested a lot of time in creating relationships with the players. I've been working with them during the off season. I've been calling meetings together. And he just goes on and just shows confidence and leadership. That, for me, will set the foundation for a very competitive environment between those two quarterbacks, which, of course, will only make them all the better. And, you know, I don't want him to go out there and say, fuck Mitch Trubisky. I'm not never going to help
I
him.
I do. I was just going to interrupt and say that, like, I answered the question correctly. I said what I think he's going to say, but what I want him to do is go out there and say, fuck Mitch Trubisky, fuck Ryan Pace. They told me I was going to be the only quarterback. I hate this shit. Trade me now. That's what I want
to
hear.
That would be hilarious.
You know, Ryan Pace seems like a pretty calculated guy. I mean, don't you think, you know, in that little behind the scenes video that Bears.com put out when Pace sees Trubisky and Halas Hall for the first time, and he said, you know, I've been picturing this scenario for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of me thinks that this is, you know, they know what they have in their starter. Glennon's going to be the guy out there, and I think that's the sole reason why they don't really want him to worry about Mitch Trubisky. And I think that's kind of Mark Sanchez's piece in this quarterback pie, is you let Glennon do his thing and he's either going to show out or he's going to hang himself, and then it's the Mitch Trubisky era. But if he plays well, then you still have Trubisky working and learning from a veteran quarterback in Mark Sanchez, and Glennon's just kind of free and clear to do what he needs to do to be the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears.
All right, let's tackle another question here. Chris Armstrong, our good friend, what do you guys think of Kyle Fuller's return? I'm excited, thought he was ascending before the injury. What do you think, Shane?
I don't have any. I don't know if Lauren agrees, but to me it seems like, I think you kind of alluded to it, Aldo, there's a huge disconnect between the coaching staff and maybe even the front office and Kyle Fuller. To me, I just feel like it's only a matter of time before Kyle Fuller is a former Bear. I don't know why I feel that way. I just that gut instinct that I, you know, last year Fangio kind of called him out a couple of different times. You know, he had a knee scope, and then it was a little bit more, and yeah, he should be back here in a few more weeks, and then he ends up missing, you know, all 16 games. So to me, it just seems like he kind of pussyfooted around and didn't really want to put in all the work that was necessary to return to the field last year. And I think maybe, you know, the coaching staff may have soured on him. So I wouldn't be surprised if he is healthy in camp. I wouldn't be surprised to see Kyle Fuller be a trade option to recoup maybe a future pick or, you know, a future player on the Bears roster. I'm not so sure I see Kyle Fuller on the 2017 Bears final 53 when we get to that point in August.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't remember if I said it on a podcast or not. I feel like I did, but I don't remember. But I really feel like Kyle Fuller's already played his last snap as a Chicago Bear, like Shane started to say too. And maybe his last snap in the NFL. I mean, this knee injury thing is not going away. It doesn't seem like the way that all of his coaches have talked about him when they're asked, to me, it's just been red flag after red flag that this guy might not ever be in the same football shape he ever was. I mean, they haven't come out and say it, but the writing's kind of on the wall and reading in between the lines. Like even Ed Donatell was asked about him just a couple of days ago at the minicamp, and he said, quote, I expect him to get back in there and compete. The essence of it is he's been off a full year as far as games go, so we've got to get his health back, and he's heading that way, and get him back into things. And it's been 10 months since he had a minor arthroscopic knee surgery, and we still have to get his health back. I mean, this is a huge red flag to me that I think keeps getting swept under the rug, but I really don't think his health is ever going to get back if it's taking this long for an injury that he was playing through it, but supposedly in the preseason, in the training camp at the beginning last year. And then I remember the Pace quote was that, you know, we just decided to get it cleaned up now, just rather than have it linger for a while. But if it's still an issue, he still needs to get his health back. I just don't know if he's going to at all. And I don't think the Bears are going to be the team that waits and sees if he can. I think Shane's totally right. If he gets healthy enough to practice and play in the preseason, they might try and get some trade value for him. But otherwise, this is a 53-man roster cut for me, too.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I never really thought about it that way. You know, I just kind of expected that he had this minor surgery, but he just still felt something wrong and that he would come back 100% healthy this year. But all eyes will be on Kyle Fuller next week to see if he's out there on the field and how he is running. Now, if he does stick with the Bears, wouldn't he be an ideal slot corner for this team, along with Cooper and the other guy, Amukamara, on the outside?
To me, I think, and Phil's not here tonight to talk about it, but I do agree with Phil. I think if he is, you know, health permitting, I think Kyle's future is at safety. He, you know, looking back at him at Virginia Tech, that's just the way that he played. He kind of played that rover role, and when the action was in front of him, that's where he seemed to benefit the most. And they talked a little bit to Fangio, and he kind of dismissed it early on. But then, you know, Pace said maybe we will try him out there. But I heard one interview, and this was quite a while back too, talking to Fuller, and he seemed pretty adamant that he was a cornerback. But to me, he's better when the action is in front of him, and you know he can attack downhill, because that's, you know, there's a lot of physicalness to his game. So to me, Phil, you know, has been on that pretty much since the day that we drafted him, mentioning him as a safety, and I tend to agree. But you know, the Bears threw an awful lot of numbers, like Ryan Pace likes to do, at a need position at cornerback and at safety, and you know, it seems like we have about 35 players there between cornerback and safety this year. And to me, like Lauren said too, if he's not traded for a conditional type pick or a back end roster, you know, maybe an offensive tackle that the Bears like, you know, that's not going to get time someplace else, or a, you know, conditional type pick, I just don't see Kyle Fuller suiting up for the Bears this year.
Well, and that is leads us to another one of our questions. The Ultimate Moyer asks, actually, he's not the one that asked that. Who was the one that asked that question about defensive backs? Let me see. It was Chris Krogman, K-R-O-G-M-A-N. I apologize, Chris, if I mispronounced your name. But you asked, who makes the team in the secondary? It seems like there are 15 DBs in play. And actually, I just counted the DBs. There's 16 on the roster. So it's a crowded defensive backfield, Lauren. What are you expecting in terms of who's going to come out of there and who could be potentially starters? I've been meaning to write kind of a ridiculously early starter projection for the team, but I thought I'd wait till after camp this week just to collect some more thoughts. But who do you have in mind?
You know, although I count 17 when I just glance at it here, so it's even a little bit more. But
you're sober, I'm not.
Shows what you know. I'm not expecting a lot of. I mean, we know we're not going to see a ridiculous number of cornerbacks kept on this team. I mean, I don't know if it's a guarantee that even all three of the free agents they sign actually do stick on the roster. I mean, you could see, you know, if say they leave DeAndre Hall at corner, or he just starts performing well at corner, and Hall and Amukamara are your starters, and you probably got LeBlanc in the slot. I'm just eliminating Kyle Fuller already. I don't know if you keep Marcus Cooper around or not, if you know, depending on how well you feel he can play special teams compared to like a B.W. Webb or a Sherrick McManus or a Bryce Callahan, you know, a guy like Cooper or even a Amukamara, you could probably flop either one of those two. If they're not both starting, the other one, he might not have a spot on this team just because their contracts are easily movable. And if he's not going to be able to be, if he's not starting and he's not a great special teams contributor, or at least a better special teams contributor than a McManus or a Callahan, then you might see one of them be cut early. But we're looking at maybe five or six cornerbacks kept on this roster, and that's probably going to be, you know, Amukamara, Hall, Cooper, maybe Webb, LeBlanc, and then a Bryce Callahan or maybe a Kyle Fuller. But there's not a lot of room for the Jonathan Bankses of the world to stick around. And even you look at the safety position, you know, between Demps, Amos, Jones-Quarte, Bush, Eddie Jackson, and even DeAndre Houston Carson, you're not going to be able to keep all of your young guys. Those guys are all, well, I mean, besides Demps, you've got like five safeties on this roster that are 25 or under in age, and I don't think you're going to be able to keep all five of them. I mean, it could be the end of sixth-round pick DeAndre Houston Carson. It could be the end of Harold Jones-Quarte. I really think you're going to see at least one or two really notable defensive backs leave in those 53-man roster cuts, one of whom will probably be Kyle Fuller.
Doesn't it seem like you brought up HJQ, Jones-Quarte, doesn't it seem like there's a disconnect with the defensive coaching staff with a guy like him and a guy like Kyle Fuller? Do you agree there? It just seems like with Jones-Quarte, they threw him out there, and it seemed like last offseason they're playing him up so much, and he went out there. But it seems like if he makes a mistake, then he's not just demoted, he's pushed to the end of the bench, and then you don't really see him anymore for quite a while, and then they might bring him back. I don't know. To me, it just seems like there's a little bit of a coaching staff disconnect with a guy like Kyle Fuller and another guy like Harold Jones-Quarte. Maybe I'm looking at the situation wrong, but I was just wondering what you guys thought on that.
You would think with a guy like him, the way he got sort of benched last year and thrown around, that now when they make this overhaul at the safety position sort of with Demps and Amos, and then you draft Eddie Jackson, you're expecting a lot from Bush and maybe Houston Carson, that you cut Harold Jones-Quarte if the coaching staff wasn't happy with him last year and he's not costing you a lot of money. I mean, I agree that there's some fogginess there. Although,
yeah, I remember Harold Jones-Quarte would make a mistake and immediately get thrown into the doghouse, whereas I think it was Phil pointed out a number of times last year that Tracy Porter would commit mistakes too, and he was left on the field. So it seemed like there was a double standard. Harold Jones-Quarte would easily get benched for an error, which was usually because he was being very aggressive, whereas Tracy Porter was sometimes loafing, probably trying to nurse an injury, but nonetheless he was loafing and he was left on there. So that double standard was not good to see.
Yeah.
And this is a contract year for Harold Jones Quarte, so maybe they're hoping that can be some motivation. They're saying, okay, maybe one more year here to at least bring him to camp and see if he can build off. Maybe they were happy with what he did in camp last year, and then they felt like it dropped off in the regular season, and now they feel like, okay, let's give him one more shot here, and maybe he does get cut at the end of training camp, or maybe he does get, you know, maybe he does stick on this roster. But he's in a contract year. Chris Brzezinski's obviously on a one-year deal, and Sherrick McManus is on a one-year deal. Prince Mukamara is on a one-year deal. And, of course, Kyle Fuller is entering his last year. But those are the only guys that are – Aaron Banks, too. Those are the guys entering contract years.
And, you know, you brought up maybe possibly moving on a guy from Marcus Cooper. You know, he's the only guy that they committed to. I think he got a three-year deal. I'm not sure exactly what the guaranteed money is. But it's just he saw so many of these one-year deals, and it seems that that's more of a trend, you know, NFL-wide now, but with Ryan Pace, especially the last 2 years. But then you see him go out and get a guy like Marcus Cooper, and he committed, you know, he gave him the 3 year deal. So that's something interesting to kind of look at moving forward.
And speaking of that contract, it's very much a Mike Glennon contract. So first year has all the guaranteed money, and then after this year, he's a pretty easy cut after this season if they want to, but they still owe him a full $6 million from the guarantee that they gave him.
One other thing about Jones Quarte, and I mentioned his aggression. When Lauren, when you and I were out at camp last year, I recall him playing so aggressively against Bears wide receivers. It was a play down the right sideline, a deep pass to Alshon Jeffrey, and Quarte just came in there and gave him a lick and then sort of stood over him. And that's the type of aggressive play you love to see in a Bears secondary, reminiscent of Gary Fensick and Doug Plank. And, you know, it may perhaps, you know, he's been warned not to be overly aggressive and play the ball more. He's not doing that. But, yeah, it would seem a shame to give up on him when it seems like he's going into his third, fourth year that he might be ready to blossom.
Yeah, coming from a small school like Finley, too, I don't think we can discount that. You know, you're talking about, you know, especially after the draft that we just had, everybody's been kind of – talking about Ryan Pace investing in these small school guys. And, you know, there's going to be more of a transition period there for a guy like Harold Jones Quarte. And he's still only 23 years old, coming from a school like Finley. And, you know, you watch him and you do see the upside there. That's why I was just wondering, you know, we don't get we get the benefit of watching him play, but we don't get the benefit of seeing what he's like behind the scenes. And maybe that's where the disconnect is, you know, and you bring up a guy like Kyle Fuller. You know, when Kyle Fuller got here, he seemed like he was very open and engaging with the media. And then that just stopped almost immediately. You know, he came out like a ball of fire in the first couple of games, you know, versus San Francisco and versus the Jets with those interceptions. And then after that, it was kind of a descent, you know, down, and then the injuries happened. But there's a lot of interesting stories moving forward with this team, because I don't care what anybody says, there is some talent here.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the secondary, and it's very, very young, unproven talent. But you want to see these guys being hungry, and it's, you know, a guy like Ryan Pace has went out and gotten a guy like Harold Jones Quarte off the scrap heap, a guy like Cravon LeBlanc off the scrap heap, and, you know, and they've showed some promise. So we'll see, you know, again this camp during cutdowns, maybe there is another corner out there that we haven't even talked about yet that will be, you know, that shining beacon moving forward that you know, we're not talking about whatsoever right now that will be added to this mix.
And Shane mentioned it a little bit, but I didn't realize that Jones Quarte is actually the youngest in the secondary, but was the youngest before Eddie Jackson and the youngest last year. He's like a week younger than Deion Bush and a bit younger than Amos and DeAndre Houston Carson. So there's obviously there's still a lot of growth there in his game. And like you mentioned, although I remember the exact play you're talking about, and it seemed like Jones Quarte was really barking a lot on the field and was sort of that vocal leader that we were kind of like, hey, you know, there's a guy that everyone took notice of. And I think there were quite a few articles written about him. I think Shane mentioned some of the preseason hype he got last year. And it was sort of like there was actually a little bit of an excitement about this sort of unproven small school safety that I don't know if we all agree, but I thought he played better than he got credit for last year. And we talked a little bit about what Phil mentioned, the unfair treatment, where his leash was much shorter than he than everyone else's. And yes, he made mistakes, but it did. There were a lot of encouraging signs with both he and Amos. I thought that, you know, you bring him back into this next year, you let him compete with Quinton Demps and Eddie Jackson and Deion Bush again, and you're going to get a decent safety that comes out of the top of that, because at least one of those guys, your chances are that there's some quality talent that comes out of that young group.
Love it. All right. Next question is from Kieran Hall. And I just want to say that Kieran and I have been in talks. He might be joining Bears Barroom to provide some commentary. So I'm looking forward to his input. And he's got a good question here. He asked, my biggest plus this offseason so far is Leonard Floyd possibly being at 250, 255 pounds. Do you think he can be a 10-sack guy? Well, if Jose Cotto was here, he would say he thinks that he can be a 15-sack guy. But what do you guys think, starting with Shane?
Yeah, I absolutely think he can be a 10 sack guy. And, you know, we I saw the quotes there about him being up at or near, or maybe I think somebody even said 252 pounds. And I want to stress to a lot of people out there, you know, kind of tap the brakes on that a little bit, because we don't really care what Leonard Floyd is, what his weight is right now in May. That's not really our concern. Yes, you want to see him bulked up, but he himself has said he has a problem maintaining that weight. And coaches said that he played last year at points at 225 pounds. Well, he weighed in at the combine last year at 244 pounds. So you can kind of see that big discrepancy where he lost the weight going into training camp, where these guys are, you know, busting their ass every day and sweating. But you know, he gets in this off-season program, the whole off-season here for the first time, and I am glad to see him bulked up, but I'm not gonna put too much faith into him starting week one at 250 pounds. I mean, I guess I'll just put out there, I'll believe that part of it when I see it. I just don't I don't have a whole lot of faith that he's going to be able to maintain that weight. Maybe, you know, he looks like he's added some mass in his arms. So it's good to see him putting in the work that way and putting on the weight the right way. I mean, last year we saw him at rookie camp when he was boarding the bus, the Bears literally gave him a box of nacho chips to eat. And everybody remembers us all laughing about, you know, them setting the alarm on his phone to go off every 2 hours to remind him to eat. But that's yet another story to monitor moving forward. You know, if he's at 252 now, what's he going to be at, you know, during the third game of the preseason? That's I'll be more interested to see what he is then.
Yeah, Leonard Floyd, head over to Chipotle with Adam Shaheen. He'll teach you how to pack on some pounds. Lauren, I want your take on Leonard Floyd, and I also want you to talk a little bit about last year and around this time, you had posted some videos about Leonard Floyd, and you kind of sounded the alert of, you know, this guy gets pushed around a little bit, so a little bit too much for your taste. What do you think happened during his progression as a Chicago Bear that started to alleviate those concerns from what we were seeing, that this guy, while he still doesn't have the NFL strength that we would love, he is still able to produce? And what is it that you think helped him transform into a viable all-pro type outside linebacker?
Well, before I get into that, I looked while you were talking. I wanted you guys to guess. This will be a fun game. Who was the last Chicago Bears player to record a 15 or more sack season? And actually, this was the last player to be 13 or higher. Was actually no one has gone over 13 since him.
Wow.
15. Trace Armstrong.
Could be Trace.
No.
If it's not Trace, we're going back to Richard Dent.
Yes, Richard Dent in 1985, 17 sack season was the last time a Bears player has had 13 or more sacks in a game. A couple guys have come to 12.5. Dent did in 1993.
Mark Anderson did as a 12. Rookie.
Yeah, but yeah, you said Trace Armstrong had 11.5 in 93 also. But yeah, so the 15 sack thing is maybe a little bit rich for me. I mean, that's possible, but it's definitely a little bit rich. But in terms of the weight, I mean, Phil and I were saying all along that the number on the scale isn't all that important to me, and it's more about how he plays and the strength that he's able to show on the field. I mean, I don't care if he weighs 250 pounds or 230 pounds, but if he does a good job of using leverage and using both leverage physically of height off the ground and also where his hands are, inside leverage with his hands, that can make up for a lot of bulk or strength issues, because you're just using what you have better than the person against you is using what they have. And I think we started to see a lot of improvement in that area in him this past year. I mean, I'm not concerned about the, oh, if he comes into the season at 240 instead of 250, I don't know. I don't, that number specifically doesn't really bother me, although I'm not confident, like Shane said, in his ability to keep that number high. But that's not that big of a deal to me. It's about how much of a muscle and how bulk, how much physical tone and the ability that he's able to use that strength. We started to see him do that better last year, even as a pass rusher. He started to add a little bit more to his pass rushing repertoire. He learned how to convert speed into power. That was something I literally did not see him do. I went through as many games as I could get my hands on of his Georgia tape, and I didn't see him do it a single time, but we saw him do it a couple times last year, especially on stunts when he's able to loop around and get some momentum. And he can use that momentum to get inside of the tackle when he's looping to the outside and kind of surprise him with his strength from the speed that he's able to generate, because we know how fast he is. And same thing in the run game. I think we start to see him get lower and not get too aggressive and get a little bit more, but also at the same time get more physical. So a lot of times at Georgia, he would be the guy that wanted to get to the ball really bad, but he would just run around guys, and he'd sometimes take himself out of the play if he'd go too far outside and let himself get blocked away, or maybe he would sort of it leave his gap responsibility to try and make the big play and go and get the running back. And sometimes if he missed the tackle or misjudged his route to the runner, he would allow another big run outside of him. But now we started to see him sort of calm down a little bit. He kept that mentality, but it was much less of a chicken with his head cut off and much more controlled, and he did a good job of just sort of knowing what his responsibility was, setting an edge, even if that's not necessarily making the play. It's still, forcing the running back to cut back inside to the arms of a Jarrell Freeman in the middle or Akiem Hicks coming from the backside. It was just, you're starting to see it come together more for him mentally, and he's being able to use his body more to his advantage, use that length even better than he has before, and keep his leverage low. Even though he's a little bit of a tall, long guy, he does a good job of really, he's getting better at using all of his traits to his advantage rather than just, being faster or being quicker than all of the competition like it was at Georgia. Now he's not faster than every tackle, but he's getting smarter at using his speed in specific ways to be able to use that speed as an advantage over a tackle that might be pretty darn fast and faster than he's dealt with before.
Fangio, it seemed like, moved him around a lot early in the season, and that really didn't help his progression. Do you expect Fangio to maybe go back to that plan now that the young man has a full year with the playbook, as had as a year of NFL experience? Do you expect to see Floyd a little at inside linebacker, guarding a slot receiver or the tight end out of the slot among his regular duties?
I just pulled up his player, his lineups from last year, and he did a lot of a slot early on in the year, but they didn't rotate him to the inside much until more mid-season and late season. But they started him off quite a bit, moving him around and using him more in coverage rather than, asking him to do more there rather than just being more a pure pass rusher or run defender. They were allowing him to sort of see what all he could do. They threw him into the fire a little bit, and it wasn't until later in the season that they sort of, no, I don't want to say simplified it, but took away some of his responsibilities and let him just, focus on stopping the run and determining whether it's a run or a pass. And if it's a pass, you're doing one thing, and if it's a run, you're doing another thing. And there's no thought as far as coverage or, getting or whether or not he's going to blitz this guy or which gap he's got to take. It's sort of just a simpler thing for him. And I think we will start to see them open that up maybe just a little bit more, because you see, a lot of these guys on the roster right now, you don't see Willie Young drop back in coverage much. Lamar Houston doesn't drop back in coverage much. McPhee, a little bit every once in a while, but not a whole lot. Whereas a guy like Sam Acho is much more likely to mean that it's just a little bit more predictable with those guys. And I think you want, as Vic Fangio, you want to have outside linebackers that you can do a little bit more of both with and be a little bit less predictable in that sense. And it wasn't all that detrimental because they run so much of that nickel that you kind of know the four rushers on the field, the two linemen and the two outside linebackers, are going to be your four rushers the majority of the time. So it's not like it's a horrible detriment, but I think you do want to see – he's going to want to see a little bit more flexibility, and I think you're going to see him at least try again to get Floyd in more difficult situations. And it might be the same story as last year where that might be too much for him again and you'd rather just have him pass rush to get as many sacks as possible and have him not worry about coverage.
No, I don't have the numbers here in front of me, Lauren, but maybe it's something that you know, but maybe you don't know. Is there any correlation? I think it was PFF that put out the stat there where showing that Floyd is one of the top rushers. Was it weeks 12, 13, and 14? Is that what it was?
10, 11, 12. There's 10 through 14, I think.
Now, is there any correlation to that and when McPhee returned and started to get more healthy? And his snaps increased?
I can run some really quick numbers here. I have Floyd's up. Let me just check McPhee's. But that for the record, that was the Tampa Bay, New York, San Francisco, and Detroit games. Because missed week 12 in between there.
Because it seemed to me when McPhee got back and he started to get a little bit more burn on a consistent basis, that's when we saw Floyd's numbers start to blossom, and maybe if he didn't get home, but he was still making some noise.
Yeah, so McPhee came back week 7 against Green Bay just briefly and then played a little bit more against the Vikings. Then there was their bye week, and then it was that stretch where Floyd started playing well too. So one of McPhee's better games was that Minnesota game week 8 before the bye, which, you know, Floyd didn't do a – I mean, he had a sack in that game and a couple pressures, but it wasn't – wasn't a great game, but it was right after the bye week that he really took off. So maybe there's some correlation there with not only the bye week to really prepare for the second half of the season and take some rest, but also McPhee using that bye week to get really even that much healthier to have a more successful weeks 10 through 14.
What was that?
That was me knocking my water bottle over. Sorry.
That's all right. I was looking for a lightsaber sound effect so that I could put right after Lauren stopped sharing those young Skywalker. Well done, Lauren. All right, let's move on to our next question. We got a good one here from Rad Chad Zad. He asked a question. Do you see three tight end sets a la Atlanta being used with Miller, Sims, and Shaheen or Daniel Brown? Great question.
I think that would be a really smart decision, but I don't know if we're gonna quite see it. If I were offensive coordinator, I would run those a lot more because I think you can get some really cool mismatches, and I really like what Atlanta does with them, and even New England will do some stuff with it too. But I don't think that's quite been Dowell's cup of tea, or at least his MO in the past with Tennessee. He does a lot of two tight end sets, and he'll rotate in that third guy in a lot of those two tight end sets, but I don't think he does as much full-on three tight end formations. Shane?
It just is kind of off what Rad Chad Zad was asking a little bit, but it kind of pertains to some tight end news.
Oops, I found it.
Jesus, Aldo.
I see your Schwartz is longer than mine is, Lauren.
Great movie.
I see the Pittsburgh Steelers released Ladarius Green 1 year into his contract. Now, again, I don't have this in front of me, but it seemed like the Bears sniffing around him a little bit last year.
Yeah, but free he's agency? Got bad concussion issues. That's why they released him.
Oh, is that what it was from? Okay.
Yeah, he's probably going to retire. That's the thought.
Okay, I didn't look into it too much, but it seemed it's just popped into my head there when I saw that. I'm like, I was wondering if maybe that would be somebody that they look at, but yeah, if he's gonna retire from the concussion issue, that doesn't make too much sense, but yeah. Sorry for bringing it up.
I mean, there's a chance, and I like Ladarius Green a lot as a player, but then there's a chance he could still come to it. But I mean, that's why they released him, is because he only played in like 6 games last year, and they still had to pay him, you know, $6 million guaranteed. And I read someone was reporting that the Steelers did not do their homework on his concussion history, and so that's a big reason why they're like, oh, crap, and they ended up releasing him now. So I don't think any team is going to really count on him being any kind of major contributor, but you never know.
There's a lot of good young tight end talent in the league right now. It's a good time to draft a tight end in your fantasy league in the third or fourth round.
You know, we're talking about all the cornerbacks that we have. It's really the same type of a deal at tight end. I mean, you got Broniker, Daniel Brown, that Franco House.
Yeah, that's
the former power forward, you know, former power forward that probably seems destined for the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Zach Miller, you know, with his injury history. Michael Pruitt is a guy that they brought in. Obviously, they invested highly in Adam Shaheen and Deion Sims. You know, there seems to be some young, unproven talent there other than, you know, Zach Miller is proven to be a viable tight end, but just the injury history brings up the red flags. But it's kind of the same type of a deal. You know, when we're talking cornerbacks and safeties, there's a lot of numbers there that's unproven, but there is some upside with pretty much all of the guys. So it's going to be another interesting spot to watch.
Yep. You know, and yeah, there's a lot of position groups that there's going to be lots of great camp battles, a lot of fun. Hey, Lauren, I remember you wrote a story about Dow Loggins when he was named offensive coordinator, and you mentioned that at Tennessee he liked to run the fullback position probably more than most offensive coordinators or as much as any. And so what do you think about this kid, Freddie Stevenson? Do you know much about him, the undrafted free agent who plays fullback, and the Bears ended up releasing Lasique because they want to, I guess they want to take a close look at Stevenson. What are your thoughts on him? Ding, 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 ding,
ding. Mute button.
Lauren, you still with us?
I was just talking away, and I was wondering what the guys were talking about, and it was muted, but I didn't know what you guys were waiting, why you were, like, making that noise. It took me, like, 30 seconds to realize you couldn't hear me. What I started to say was you need to get that lightsaber sound effect ready, because I was going back through Mr. Dow Loggins' offenses with the Tennessee Titans to look. I was looking specifically at the three tight end formations that our previous question was asking about. In 2012, I think I put there in 2013, when his last year's offensive coordinator was like 39 out of 1,000 offensive snaps were with the three tight end formations, not including the three tight ends in the goal line formation. And then 2012 was like 20 out of 1,000. So it's something he dabbles in, at least in the past, but he has not done it a ton. And he could surprise us this year. You know, he's not destined to go back and repeat what he's done in the past. He could do more three tight end stuff, but I'm not expecting it to be a major factor in the offense. But as far as the fullback position goes, I mean, he did do it more and use them more than other people. And it wasn't as much, you know, to carry the ball, but they were just a bigger part of the offense in terms of on run blocking. And while I've got the numbers up, you know, they used a lot of, you know, two, like I formation, you know, those kind of two running back, one tight end sets, a decent amount compared to a lot of other teams. And I think that's kind of what I was expecting more of last year. But I think his offense has sort of developed a little bit since Tennessee. It's more of a they throw more of those kind of spread looks. You know, Shane, right? It's a spread offense, just like Trubisky was in college, right, Shane?
Exactly.
No, but they definitely don't do as many of the sort of the, you know, the older style two running backs in the backfield, one a true fullback, as they did anymore. I mean, we saw Lasique. I don't feel like they had much of an issue with the CK's performance, even though we kind of continually questioned why he got his 7 to 9 snaps a game to do very little. I don't think they felt like he did a bad job by any means, because they kept putting him out there and kept using him as just a means of mixing things up. But we talk about it every year. We talked about it even with Adam Gase. We need to see them use more of just two running backs. He doesn't have to be a fullback, but get Jordan Howard and, say, Tariq Cohen out there on the field at the same time. Good luck. You know, or, you know, even get Jeremy Langfield out there in the backfield with Benny Cunningham, and you can come out there with two running backs in the backfield and have them both motion out to wide receiver, and all of a sudden you're spreading out a defense and you've got two linebackers one-on-one with two running backs that are good receivers out of the backfield. There's your mismatch. You know, you can do a lot of different things when you have such a deep running back room that you don't even need a fullback. You can even leave him – you could put in Jordan Howard at fullback just to throw off a defense and let him run block. Let him block for Kadeem Carey, because you know the linebackers aren't going to be expecting him to be coming their way without the football in his hands. And I know you don't want to have him do that a ton, because you want to make the most out of every rep, that Jordan Howard gets on the field, but you can do it with a carry. You can do it with Benny Cunningham. You can really just kind of take the position where it might be the most loaded position on the roster besides interior offensive lineman, running back, and just find ways to get these players on the field and use them, because they can really be – you just need to get the best talent out there. And if all that talent is at running back, you gotta make your offense fit the players that are on your roster.
It seems like that we've been – this might be a little bit before your time, Lauren, but Aldo, you would remember back, 1995, you have Ramont Harris, the ultra back, and Rashawn Salaam and Robert Green, and everybody's begging to get these guys, somehow on the field together. And then, you have Thomas Jones and Cedric Benson, and then, Matt Forte comes in, and did they go out and, bring in a free agent like Chester Taylor? And it seems like year after year after year with the Chicago Bears, they've had, they're running back and then some what they deemed as quality backups, or we deemed as quality players. And we've been begging for them to get them somehow on the field together in some type of formation to take advantage of these situations like Lauren was talking about. But we just so very rarely see it. And this year, especially, like Lauren said, you have a guy like Tariq Cohen, a guy like Jeremy Langford and Kadeem Carey and Jordan Howard. It just seems like you have such an a stable of backs that bring such so many different ways that they can attack people. I think it's something that absolutely has to happen, and if Loggins doesn't employ that, I really question what his thinking is. But it seems like it's an ongoing question for the past 20-25 years in Chicago, where they've had some quality backs, but we very rarely see them on the field at the same time.
Yeah, it seems like the Bears have always had offensive coordinators who were never creative enough to use some of the resources that they had on the team. And I think even Devin Hester is a good example of that. I mean, here you had a guy who could create magic when he had the ball, and so what did they do? They just sort of stuck him out at wide receiver and didn't do anything special, put him in a wildcat formation. Maybe he did that once or twice. Have him, come out of the backfield. Lots of other teams would have taken a Devin Hester in his prime and probably would have created a lot more offensive explosion with a talent like that. Unfortunately, who was it that was offensive coordinator during Hester's prime? Mike Martz.
Tice. Ron
yeah.
Turner.
Oh, Ron gosh. Turner, yeah. Yeah, and to me, you got to look at another team like the Philadelphia Eagles. You bring up Tariq Cohen, and you really want Dowell Loggins to be sitting down and watching how Doug Peterson is employing a guy like Darren Sproles with a Ryan Matthews, and now they just brought in the running back, LeGarrette Blount from New England, and to see, because it's you have such a dynamic difference in a player going from Jordan Howard to a guy like a Tariq Cohen, or if Jeremy Langford is healthy, just to see how that can affect defenses. And we know that the Bears are going to need help scoring points and getting chunk plays. And what better way to do it than with this stable of running backs that you have that are very versatile.
Another question from our Twitter followers. Nate Myers asks, obviously the Bears can have five running backs. Actually, they might have five running backs, but probably not. On the roster, which guys do you think will get cut, and who's the number one and number two? Let me begin with Shane. What do you think? Right now, I count 6 running backs on the roster. Who is not going to make this team, and who do you like toting the ball behind Jordan Howard?
Well, to start off with who I think is in trouble. Now, to me, I think Kadeem Carey's in trouble. And I know a lot of people have been saying that, but it seems like he's, he'll go out there and he will show out. But then, the next time he carries the ball, he'll sprain his ankle or ding his knee. And one thing to keep in mind is he doesn't have any tie-in with Ryan Pace. Ryan Pace did not draft him. He's a Phil Emery pick. And we know that those guys have been shown the door here, you know, over the last few months and even the last couple of weeks. But after Jordan Howard, I think they're going to give Jeremy Langford every chance to succeed, you know, health permitting. Yet again, I mean, that seems like a constant thing with our Chicago Bears, but you know, Jeremy Langford he's going into year three, but he's still kind of just scratching the surface because he's like a, you know, he started out at cornerback and he played some wide receiver and he really hasn't been a running back all that long. But to me, I think they're going to give him every chance to grasp that number two and run with it and show that he can be viable. And like Lauren said, you know, kind of flare him out and put him in different packages, and then you can bring in your little scat back in Tariq Cohen. So those would be my top three: Jordan Howard, Jeremy Langford, and Tariq Cohen.
The Bears are in an interesting position here because with Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen, and Jeremy Langford, you have three running backs that don't do special teams. And again, Cohen can probably be a return man and then be in the competition there. And maybe, I mean, I don't know if a 5'6" guy has a role on a kickoff or a punt coverage team. Maybe you can try him out at gunner since he's so fast. But these are three guys that at least don't have a lot of experience doing special teams. Jeremy Langford did not play special teams last year at all. Obviously, Jordan Howard didn't, and Cohen, I think he tweeted out that he had one punt return as a collegiate player, and you know, but because he was such a dynamic part of their offense that, you know, they just didn't use him on special teams, and it's gonna be tough. I mean, you're probably gonna. I mean, those are the three guys that all seem safe because of the recent draft investments. But you wonder if maybe there's a surprise. You know, maybe Jeremy Langford could. I mean, you never know that one of those guys could be on their way out, and Langford would seem to be the odd man out of those three. But assuming those three are all safe, even though they don't play special teams, that brings you down to Cunningham and Carey, who the one that sticks on the roster absolutely has to be the better special teams player because that's you they're not going to see the field much on offense at all if you're rolling with Cohen, Langford, and Howard as your top three, not in that order. And I don't think that's as one-sided as people think. I think Benny Cunningham has this reputation for special teams and Kadeem Carey doesn't, but that's a lot closer than I think. If Benny Cunningham isn't your starting kick returner, then he's not making as much of a specialty team impact as you might think. When he was with the Los Angeles Rams, outside of the kick returning, he was essentially the same role that Kadeem Carey played last year. They're both on the punt team in about the same spot, and they both did a little bit of kickoff coverage here and there, but they weren't consistently used in that team, and they do a little bit on the punt return team just as a blocker. But their bread and butter is really in that same spot in the punt return team. And Kadeem Carey worked on the kickoff return team as the primary blocker in front of the kickoff return man. So it's not as though his special teams impact was low at all. He played a couple of very important roles, not a four-phase guy, but you're not going to see a lot of running backs that really do play all four phases. And realistically, you're looking at two guys that do a similar amount on special teams with Cunningham and Carey. And so I don't think that's necessarily, I don't think either one has a clear advantage over the other going into training camp for being that fourth guy. And maybe they value Cunningham's returnability. You know, if he wins that competition, obviously, you know, the kick return competition, then he's got a spot on the roster. But maybe they view his receiving ability on the backfield a little bit more, or maybe they like Kadeem Carey's ability as a runner a little bit more and they give him the slight edge. But I don't think that one is, you know, some people are immediately writing off Kadeem Carey as out of the roster because he's A, because they think he's A, not a good enough special teamer, and B, think Benny Cunningham is a Pro Bowl level special teamer. But I don't think that's really the case with how they've both been used. I think that's a very much 50-50 up in the air. Either one of those guys could make it and either one could get cut because it's not as though they invested much in Cunningham, just a 1 year veteran minimum deal this offseason.
Well done. All right, boy, we could talk for another hour. I've got so many other topics to talk about. I wanted to get your guys' impression on Tanner Gentry, who was the talk of rookie camp. Shane, what do you think about this young guy? Is this guy, could he be another Cameron Meredith? I saw Pro Football Focus, Lauren's, one of Lauren's employers, they put out a graphic saying that Cameron Meredith was second in the league in terms of, was it long catches, deep passes caught? And it seems like Tanner Gentry has the same kind of speed, the same kind of skills. Could Tanner Gentry come in and develop into another Cameron Meredith? What do you think, Shane?
It seems like right now the trend is really pointing that way. He seems to be the hot guy to talk about, you know, at wide receiver for the Chicago Bears. If you're gonna kind of put a star next to a UDFA that really has a legitimate shot to make some noise in training camp and maybe even sneak onto the roster, you know, I don't have his numbers right here in front of me. I believe he's like 6'1 or 6'2, maybe around 212 in that range. So he does bring that size that a fellow white boy wide receiver, Daniel Braverman, doesn't bring to the fold. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what he can do, because I think, you know, his 40 time obviously doesn't stand out or anything like that. He's a guy that's not going to blow up combine, you know, put up great combine numbers or anything like that, obviously. But once you put the pads on him and he gets on the field, he shows more than enough speed. But he's made some really ridiculous catches. I mean, Lauren, you probably remember the game specifically, that one catch that he made diving in the end zone with a defender, you know, right up in his face, and he ended up catching it with one hand and cradling it into his body. So you do like to see those, you know, type of splash plays. Just, you know, it really is kind of a testament to the kid that he does have some superior skill. And he really has an open door coming to Chicago to really, you know, have a fantastic opportunity moving forward with this team, because you have a guy like Josh Bellamy that, you know, seems to be a glue special teams guy, but he doesn't have anything glue about him when he's on, you know, when he's playing wide receiver, dropping balls left and right. You know, there's a huge question mark with Daniel Braverman. They recently signed a guy like Titus Davis. You know, Cam Meredith is going to make the team. Who knows? Reuben Randall, he's a guy that's got some talent, but he seems to maybe not love football much, and he doesn't love to run routes, gives up on those. Deontay Thompson, Marcus Wheaton, Kevin White, Kendall Wright, it's really a wide open door for a guy like Tanner Gentry to kind of, you know, come in and make his hay. And like you said, Aldo, be the next Cam Meredith, really a guy that comes out of nowhere and can make his stamp on the 2017 Bears.
Fellas, I just I wish we had another hour. I really, really do, because this has been a lot of fun, good information. I really want to thank the followers that have sent in all these great questions. We were going to devote the second part of the show just talking about rookie camp, but your questions were so interesting and so good. We ended up talking about an hour just on those questions, so thank you all very much. Lauren, you want to tell us what's coming up next on Bears Hour Live, or promote anything that you're working on?
Yeah, you know, it's a good thing you mentioned and that we finished on Tanner Gentry, because he's going to be coming up soon in our film room. We just put out our Tariq Cohen film room video, and we'll be doing Jordan Morgan next. And then after Jordan Morgan, we'll get into some UDFAs, and Tanner Gentry will be target number one. I know Phil is a huge fan of this receiver, and the more I watch him, the more I've been warming up to him too. There are a lot of Cameron Meredith similarities that you mentioned too. There's a lot of reason to see some similarities between those two guys. So those two will be coming up, and as always, we're live on Sundays at 2 p.m.
Excellent. And Shane, I know that you have been super busy at work and with your personal life, but is there any stripper that you want to promote on Bears Barroom or anything else of interest to our listeners?
Yeah, if you need a Uber driver, just dial hashtag Koto and he will set you up.
I love it. Fellow Toshin, we missed you. Our Bears Hour Live Yoda.
Why would you become Jedi? God
damn it. And Jose, we also miss you. Hopefully you're making a lot of money Uber driving over in Connecticut. All right, Bears fans, we will be back next week. I've got an interview scheduled with John Buffon. He is the nephew of the great Doug Buffon. So we're going to go back in history, talk about number 55, Doug Buffon, the great linebacker from the 60s and early 70s. And our guest has promised to share some stories we probably have never heard before about Doug. And also we'll talk about those great radio rants that Buffon gave us on WGN Radio, WSCR here locally in Chicago. So look for that on Monday or Tuesday. And remember, if you drink, please don't drive. And always, bear down.
Are you guys familiar with the radio host Scott Farrell or Scott Farrell?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. The other day, like last week, when Phil and I were recording our Tariq Cohen and Eddie Jackson film rooms, he mentioned to me, and I'd never heard of this guy. We really want to do a whole Bears Hour live show, both talking like him, you know, talking about Cameron Meredith coming across the middle. You know, we're going to see if this guy can be an number one receiver next year. And just do like a whole show as Scott Farrell.
Absolutely. Oh, Jesus Christ. You wouldn't be able to talk, though, after that show, Lauren. Holy shit, talking like Scotty Farrell. I believe he's a big Pittsburgh fan, I believe, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, like, everything.
I like the Steelers, I like the Penguins.
Yeah.
You did a good impression of them, Lauren.
Yeah.
Which Phil's is amazing. It really is.
Phil does one?
Yeah, he was doing it. He did one of the Tariq Cohen plays like it, and then we redid it normally, but it's so funny. But it'd be fun for like a Halloween show or an April Fool's show. Can we all do a different radio host voice, like a really notable one?
Don't you remember when Aldo was out and said, "Cheers, Bears fans, this is Aldo Gandhi."
Yeah.
He did the whole show as me. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he did it in his voice.
Yeah, right.
Cheers, Bears fans. Welcome to Bears Bar.
Yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong, and I'll shut up. I swear to God, I'll shut up if anyone can prove to me that Jay Cutler is nothing more than a hack.
Shut up, you big fucking asshole.